This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about employment law. We're going to be talking about class action lawsuits and arbitration provisions and some things that I think probably you'll find very helpful to you if you are dealing with contracts and you're asked to sign a provision that may have an arbitration provision in it. My guests are employment law attorneys Cliff Pilewski of the McGuinn, Hillsman, and Pilewski Law Firm in San Francisco, and Fred Alvarez of Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich, and Rosati in Palo Alto. They're both partners in each of their respective firms. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Cliff, welcome back after many, many years.
Boy, it's great to see you, Chuck.
Very nice to have you here. And Fred, welcome for your first time here.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I'm glad to be here.
Really good to have you here. I know that you are concerned about arbitration provisions. You're concerned about the certification of class action lawsuits. I think, Cliff, what we should do is kind of define or talk at least a little bit about arbitration provisions, what you think people should look out for, and why you have some concern about the certification of class action lawsuits and how that applies perhaps in an employment situation or maybe even in a consumer situation.
Well, thanks, Chuck. You know, the employment relationship is a lot different than a consumer context. And it's different because it's an ongoing relationship. And it's very difficult for an employee to actually bring a case against their employer, no matter how righteous it may be. If you're not getting paid your wages, if you're not getting paid overtime, if you've been misclassified, if there's class-wide discrimination, it's really very difficult to bring a case against your employer and to not fear retaliation, to not experience retaliation. And in order to address that very real problem, many statutes specifically authorize employees to bring class actions, meaning to bring a case on behalf of yourself and others who are similarly situated. And the benefit of that is you can remain pretty anonymous and let one or two people bring the case.
Who would be named in the caption of the case,
they
presumably.
Would be called class representatives.
Yes.
And there's not as much opportunity for retaliation. And it's really critical because most people need their jobs for food money, mm-hmm. for insurance, and it's not a bad decision sometimes to not bring a case, mm-hmm. even if it's valid, because the risk of retaliation is real. So it is critically important that workers have the right to choose their own representatives. It could be a union, or it could be representatives in a class action, and to pursue their rights in a way that doesn't end up hurting them more. And our concern is that recently companies have been trying to prevent class actions mm-hmm. by compelling employees to agree to arbitrate their claims individually, basically saying you can't join with others, you can't share the cost of a lawyer, you can't share the cost of a lawsuit.
Would that be set forth in a document that a prospective employee would have to sign or would be asked to sign?
Yeah, sometimes it's in the application form.
I see.
Sometimes it's in the handbook. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's handed to you after you've been at the company for 20 years and your only option is to quit. I've got a case.
You either agree by signing or you quit.
Right. I have a case now where they didn't even ask for a signature. Where they came to people who had been working there for 20 years and said, if you show up to work on Monday, you've agreed that you have to arbitrate. You have to arbitrate individually. Every arbitrator has to be a resident of Texas and a member of the Texas Bar. The statute of limitations is shorter than it would be under law.
In Texas? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you can arbitrate in California, but it's a Texas company, and they want
Texas lawyers. So they want Texas law, okay.
Well, they want Texas lawyers to be the arbitrators.
I see.
They built every conceivable mm-hmm. advantage that they could think of mm-hmm. into the arbitration agreement, and your choice as a worker is to accept it or basically quit or be fired. And that just can't be. It undermines all of our employment laws and all of the public policies that are so vital to defining who we are as a state and as a country.
But Cliff, if if the employer submits to the employee this document, or there's a change in the regulations for the business that says you cannot sign up for, or you must sign up for arbitration, etc. And if you don't agree to that and you are fired, isn't that a form of retaliation under California law?
I would argue that it is, but unfortunately, even though the California Supreme Court has rendered some very good decisions protecting employees, the U.S. Supreme Court is taking the position that federal law preempts or trumps state law. And as we sit here today, it appears as though the law permits employers to fire people who won't agree to arbitrate. I know it should not be. It's hard to imagine that that really can be the law, because it is a form of retaliation, and it is a form of stripping employees of rights. In fact, it's opting out of many of the most important laws that govern the workplace.
What Supreme Court case has held this? U.S. Supreme Court case has held this?
There's a lot.
A lot of them.
Gilmer.
Too bad.
There's the Gilmer case. There's the AT&T case. There's
AT&T versus Concepcion, which was last year, I believe.
That's right. And there's a case. Well, I'll tell you what's even more interesting is that when Congress passed the Federal Arbitration Act, there was a concern that it might apply to employees as opposed to merchants.
Oh.
And labor got very upset. And they said, oh, my God, workers can't say no. They need their jobs to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. And this could lead to indentured servitude. So Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover at the time said, this doesn't apply to workers. And in case there's any doubt about it, let's include the following language, mm-hmm. that nothing herein applies to contracts of seamen, transportation workers, or any other class of worker engaged in interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And that language, designed to make sure it didn't apply to workers, was included verbatim in the statute. And it was interpreted to not apply to workers for the next 50 years. And then in 2001, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, we're going to find that the Federal Arbitration Act does apply to workers, and it's going to supersede any state law that says no. It's actually quite frightening at the way the U.S. Supreme Court has undermined workers' rights.
And the whole point of employers not wanting you to agree to or sign arbitration agreements is what are they concerned about? What are they worried about?
Well, the most important thing they're worried about is juries. They don't like standing in a public courtroom. They don't like juries. And there are such built-in advantages for employers in arbitration. Mm-hmm. For instance, arbitrators are paid by the parties. Mm-hmm. And if they want to hear another case, they need to be concerned that if they find against an employer, they're not going to be chosen by the employer again. Or their law firm or anyone else who hears about it.
I see.
And more importantly, workers who bring a discrimination case or a wrongful termination case have the burden of proof. Mm-hmm. We've got to come forward with the evidence.
Yes.
But the employer controls all of the documents, all of the witnesses, and the only way that you can really prove your case is by taking depositions and getting what we call discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Discovery is very limited in arbitration. It's supposed to be a quick and easy and efficient procedure. And without full discovery, it's sort of like telling workers, put your hands behind your back and let's come out fighting. So the institution of arbitration, especially when it's mandatory, especially when the company, your employer, picks the arbitrators,
mm-hmm.
sets the rules, has institutional advantages that really undermine employee rights.
I thought in arbitration that both sides, whether the employee as well as the employer, had the input in terms of who the arbitrators were going to be. Is that not true?
Well, it's not really true because, for instance, the company chooses who's going to be the arbitration provider. For instance, they can say all of the arbitrators have to be a retired judge, or we're going to use the National Arbitration Forum, whose panel consists of 7 retired judges or retired defense lawyers or mm-hmm. practicing defense lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
So you may get to strike some arbitrators and pick people off a panel, but the panel is chosen essentially by the employer.
All right, it's our Call a Lawyer night. We've got, I see the lawyers right now talking to each other. That's not what we want. For Call a Lawyer, I'd like you to, if you have questions in the areas of workers' comp, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant, employment law, tax, real estate, patent law, etc., the number is 1-800-525-9917. I don't want to see them talking to each other, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk to them. It's 1-800-525-9917, and as we get into the second half hour of the program, then we'll give you a chance to call and talk to my guests on the air. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about class action lawsuits. We're talking about arbitration agreements. My guests are employment law attorneys, very experienced, Cliff Pilepsky and Fred Alvarez. They're both partners in their respective firms. Cliff and I have known each other for many, many years. He was a kid when he was first on this program, actually, 28 years ago. He's a little bit older now. In any event, let's do this. Fred, I know your firm is very well known, Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich & Rosati. Does your firm do primarily defense work or what in the employment law area?
We do exclusively defense
work. Do you?
Yes.
What comments do you have to say to Cliff, who's obviously somewhat, can we say, somewhat just a little biased?
Yes. Cliff is, as always, very articulate about this topic. But the truth is that arbitration is something that people agree to. And I think even Cliff would agree that people agreeing to arbitrate is just fine because it's a process that's an alternative to go into court, and it has its advantages and its disadvantages. And people sometimes agree to do it or they don't. But the California courts have been there and been very actively there protecting whether these agreements are fair or not. So a lot of the terms that Cliff was talking about are from cases that courts said you can't do. Mm-hmm. So when somebody takes advantage of the other side in terms of how the rules will be written, the courts step in and they make sure that the forum is fair. So you've got to remember that the courts are there to do that job. And you also have to remember that people choose to do this, and people choose to work at certain places and choose to work at other places.
But what Cliff is saying is that an employer may require, even if you've been there 20 years, may require that you agree that you will agree to an arbitration clause.
Right.
And if you don't, what Cliff is saying is the employer may well fire the person.
Well, that's because the person doesn't want to work under the terms and conditions that are available to them. But that's true on all other terms, the wages, the conditions, where you work. Everything about the employment is something that you can decide to work there or not work there. And the courts have said it's okay to require arbitration as a condition of employment. And so if you want to work at this place, this is what the terms are. If you don't want those terms, you work at another place.
But Cliff is also saying that the employers are really the ones who kind of load the deck, that they're the ones who choose the arbitration group or whatever that's going to hear this, and therefore there is a built-in favoritism that the employer can get from the arbitrators.
Well,
what do you say to that?
I say that that's what the courts are there to protect against.
Yes, but if you go to arbitration and you lose in arbitration, you don't get to go to court,
no,
do you?
No, in fact, if an employer tries to compel an employee to arbitrate a case, the lawyer for the employee can go to court and say, hey, this process is unfair. The rules are stacked against me. There's all sorts of things that are not fair here. And the court can say, that's not a fair agreement, so I won't enforce mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. so you don't have to go to arbitration. So the courts are very active in that space.
But what if the employer fires the employee? Isn't that, but that could be retaliation.
Well, they'll always have their claim to
unlawful termination?
That's right.
No.
Okay, Cliff.
let me step back. It's arbitration when parties agree to it knowingly and voluntarily can be an acceptable way to resolve certain kinds of disputes. When it's a mandatory condition of employment, that's not a voluntary agreement. And mm-hmm. in this country, it's been well over 100 years since we've considered something mandated as a condition of employment to be voluntary. Well, we have several national statutes, the National Labor Relations Act and the Norris LaGuardia Act, that say because we've allowed corporations to accumulate wealth and operate in the corporate form, individual workers don't have the ability to freely negotiate terms of labor. Fred said something before that I just need to comment on. Companies can't say to you, if you want to work here, you have to waive your right to minimum wage.
Companies can or cannot?
Cannot.
They cannot.
They cannot.
Under the law.
Cannot, under the law.
All right. All
it's
right.
considered an unwaivable right.
Okay.
They
I don't
can't,
think I
they
said
can't.
That, though.
No, well, you said that they different conditions they mandate, and if you want to work here, you can. If you don't, go somewhere else.
That's right.
They can't say, if you want to work here, you have to waive your right under the discrimination statutes.
Mm.
So there are many rights that employers can't say, if you don't like the job, go across the street.
Yeah.
And those are fundamental rights. The courts have taken a different approach, or at least the federal courts have taken a different approach to arbitration agreements. They've created this fiction that arbitration agreements don't necessarily impact your rights. It's just where you go to vindicate your rights.
It's the venue, what they're
but
saying.
But that's simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't realize this, that an arbitrator is not required to know or follow the law.
Mm.
And that if an arbitrator, you take your discrimination case to an arbitrator, and an arbitrator issues a decision which is 100% wrong, that there's no problem telling a woman, you have to kiss me to get a raise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If the arbitrator finds for the company, you can't appeal it, even if it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The standard, and again, I know this is going to set you back in your chair a little bit, the standard is that an arbitration award has to be enforced by the court even if there are errors of law or fact on the face of the award that result in a substantial injustice. It doesn't sound like it could be in America, but that is the standard. And the only way it can be justified is because you chose it. You chose to arbitrate.
What do you say to that, Fred?
Well, I guess I have to beg to differ a little bit with my friend, because in California, you can establish in an arbitration agreement whatever standard of appellate review you want. It's true under federal law, the standard for appeal in an arbitration is very narrow. Remember, it's a two-way street. So an employer could be faced, and this happens, with an arbitration award that says reinstate somebody who's a drug pusher or somebody who mm-hmm. harassed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's a two-way street. So the lack of an appeal is an important issue for both parties. But in California, you can actually draft the level of appeal that you want under a California Supreme Court case. So that issue can be left to the parties to resolve.
To the employer. If it was negotiated, Fred may be right. But in most situations, it's the employer who is dictating the rules, mm-hmm. whether you can appeal. There's been agreements written that we argued in front of the California Supreme Court, a case that said if the employer loses a judgment over $50,000, they can appeal. But if the employee loses and gets nothing, they can't. So they've tried to design one-way appellate standards. Fundamentally, you can't take a justice system and turn it over to one side and invite them to choose the arbitrator and to make the rules.
What I'd like to do is have you both comment, if you would, in terms of, I think it to laypersons, and I consider myself a layperson, even though I've been a lawyer for a long, long time, but I don't practice in the employment law area. I think this is quite confusing. So when we come back in just a moment, I'd like to ask you, what recommendation do you have for the average person in trying to deal with this? All right, this is Your Legal Rights. It is our Call a Lawyer night. I hope that our lawyers are being called. Are they, Martin? Are they being called? We have three phones that are either not being called or are called. I'm not sure. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. By the way, if you are being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer tomorrow, that's Thursday morning from 8 to 11 a.m. will be available. I'll give you his phone number in the second half hour of the program. He's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. So if you have a question in the law and you want to talk with someone off the air for a Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917. In about 10 minutes, we'll be taking your calls on the air. That number is 1-415-841-4800. 1-414-8414. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We are doing a program on talking about class action lawsuits, talking about arbitration agreements. My guests are both very significant attorneys in the employment law area, Cliff Pilewski, who represents plaintiffs, and Fred Alvarez, who primarily represents, I guess exclusively represents defendants, usually the employer. One of the things I'd like to let you know about that we are, by the way, we are archiving Your Legal Rights program. So if you go to www.klw.org, you'll be able to, if you look for Your Legal Rights, you'll be able to find some of the more recent programs available in case you'd like to listen to them. Also, we're available by podcast if you would like to get a copy of the program, this program by podcast. It's www.klw.org/RRS. www.klw.org/RRS. So, Cliff, let me ask you this. In terms of, I think both you and Fred seem to be friends because...
Very good friends.
Yes, we are.
Obviously, you are. I mean, both off the air and on the air, it's obvious that you have great regard for each other. But, Cliff, what recommendation do you have for an employee who's confronted with this? What should this employee do? Certainly people today in this incredibly difficult financial situation that we are in, where the state of California has, I forget how many billions of dollars that we need that we don't have. What recommendations do you have to an employee who may be confronted with this?
I've got a few recommendations. None of them are very good because you're right. Most people need a job and don't have the luxury of either turning down a job because of an arbitration clause that may never come into effect or of getting fired.
Yeah.
So it's so important that the law be fixed. However, in many situations now, because of how oppressive and unfair this practice is, some courts are looking for some semblance of consent, and companies are now putting in what they call opt-out clauses, meaning you're bound by arbitration, and if you don't want to be participating, you must do something within 30 days. Send a letter to our HR department, check a box, and I would recommend that anyone who has the opportunity to opt out, opt out. If you have a case later on, you can always agree to go to arbitration. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can always agree to go to mediation. Mm-hmm. But then you're making a decision based on it'll be knowing, it'll be voluntary. You can choose the right ADR process for your case.
So ADR mean what?
Alternative dispute resolution, something right. Other than court.
Right.
And then you can ensure fairness. So in the consumer context, in the employment context, if you are given a chance to opt out, take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The second thing is elections matter. That the judges who are ruling on these clauses really take different approaches. There are some who are very respectful of our civil rights laws. And there are some who just want to clear their dockets and think that...
You're talking right now about the state judges,
I'm talking about state judges, and I'm talking about federal judges who are appointed by the president. I can assure you that there is a dramatic difference when the Democrats are appointing the agency heads and are appointing judges in terms of their respect for the civil rights laws and workers' rights. And indeed, the legislature itself, Congress has finally caught on to the scandal, as I call it, that is mandatory arbitration. So when we just passed the Sarbanes-Oxley whistleblower law, Congress wrote into that law that you can't require arbitration of those claims. Senator Al Franken introduced an amendment to the Defense Appropriations Bill saying that you can't get money from the Defense Department if you require your employees to arbitrate Title VII discrimination cases. So there's a lot that the legislature can do. There's a lot that judges can do. And there's just not very much that individual workers can do. One thing they might do is form a union. Because when workers act together and they form a union, they have a lot more power to negotiate their terms of labor.
Fred, what comments do you have? We have about 3 minutes left in our in our statewide version of the program, and so I want to give you a chance to say a few words in response to your friend.
I will. Ironically, what Cliff's last suggestion to form a union, that would put you into mandatory binding arbitration. Because every union contract has mandatory binding arbitration of all claims.
Yeah.
So having a union is effectively selecting mandatory arbitration. I guess the other thing I'd say is, and I think this is an important point, not all employers have these clauses. Some employers don't have arbitration at all. Some employers have one-way arbitration. Some employers have...
What do you mean one-way? What does that mean, one-way arbitration?
That you'll arbitrate, but it'll only be binding on the employer.
I see.
So it's kind of a way...
I got you.
The purpose of arbitration is to try to get, resolve a lot of disputes quickly, and that's why employers do it. But the other point is the courts are there to protect against the unfairness that Cliff keeps talking about, and they have been very aggressive, especially in California, about that. But all courts who've looked at the question have said you can be compelled to arbitrate all of these civil rights laws because that's the way our justice system works. And our courts are there to protect the process, and they do.
Cliff, do you have one very brief comment? Because we're about to end the statewide version of the program.
In order to go to court and challenge an unfair arbitration agreement, you need to spend thousands of dollars. And if you win... If you strike down the arbitration clause, the employer can appeal. It's not really an adequate remedy for most workers. And again, if you form a union, you will only be arbitrating contract cases. You're not going to have to arbitrate your discrimination cases or your wage and hour cases. So I disagree with
you. You will not have to.
That's right. Is that,
do you agree with that?
No, I don't.
You
this
don't.
Is a Supreme Court case that says you do.
This is really very difficult. You two are really confusing us, unfortunately. Well, I think we've come to the end of the half-hour program. For those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue for another half hour. In the Bay Area, we'll continue on the internet at www.klw.org. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. It's just about, it looks like 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on employment law. What I'd like to do is expand this for you. You may not be involved with a class action lawsuit. You may not be involved yet with an arbitration provision or a problem that you're going to go to arbitration on. If you have questions in the employment law area in a broad range of issues, please feel free to call in and talk to my guests. They're both very, very experienced in employment law. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. It is also our Call a Lawyer night. I'd like to tell you who we have here. That number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For workers' compensation, we have Alice O'Sullivan, a certified specialist, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. For criminal law, certified specialist Jeff Hayden. He's now the chair of the Criminal Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization. We have, for legal malpractice law, Peter Fortune, a certified specialist, also the chair of the Legal Malpractice Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization. We have Sal Timpano for landlord-tenant law, Aaron Minnis for employment law, Frank Adam for tax law and real estate, and Ron Rohde for patent law, Lemon law, arbitration law, actually BBB arbitration. And tomorrow, in case you're being hounded by your creditors, maybe you're facing a foreclosure on your home, maybe you're overwhelmed by debt, Leon Bayer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you. No obligation, by the way, whatsoever. Between 8 and 11 a.m. tomorrow, you might want to jot down his number, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. If you call and you get the voicemail, leave your name and phone number, and Mr. Bear will call you back. All right, let's do this. Let's start with Hillary. Hillary, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that you said that you were wrapping up the last conversation, but I have a question about employment arbitration.
That's fine.
Agreement.
That's fine.
And what I was wondering is, it's not a specific case or anything, but it seems like if employees have a set of unwaivable rights, and then they sign an arbitration agreement so that then consideration of those rights is now, you know, determined by an arbitrator. It seems like that is the same as waiving those rights because they're no longer set in stone. It depends on what the arbitrator decides. So I don't understand how that's, point of view been talked about in the courts at all? I mean, it seems like you're waiving your rights.
All right. Let's get some comments for you, Hillary. Thank you very much. If you turn your radio back up, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much for a very good question. Before we'll start with the responses on that, I just want to mention, if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And by the way, if you're in some other county throughout California, since this program goes throughout the state, every county has a Bar Association lawyer referral service. You can call your own for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. They'll do their best to find someone experienced, and depending on the county, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35 for a half an hour consultation. It's a great way to start. All right, what comments do you have with regard to Hillary's comment? Let me start with you on this one, Fred, if you would.
So I think Hillary is right in the sense that if you have unwaivable rights, they are not waived just because you go to arbitration. In other words, the courts have said, and I know Cliff disagrees because he argues that point very effectively, but the point is if you go to arbitration, an arbitrator has to apply the law and has to respect all the rights that are available in a courtroom. So the courts have looked at arbitration as just a different place in which the rights get vindicated. There's a courthouse and there's an arbitration setting. But the rights don't get waived from one place to the other. So if you have a discrimination case or a harassment case or a minimum wage case or a wage and hour case, those cases get heard by arbitrators all the time. That's kind of what they do for a living. And some would argue that arbitrators are pretty good at what they do. They're specialists in the field of employment. They know these laws backwards and forwards. And, of course, California judges have a lot to cover, a lot of different areas. They're specialized in a lot of spaces, but the arbitrators who handle employment law tend to be employment lawyers. So they understand that employees have rights. They're not being waived. It's just a different place in which they're being litigated.
Okay, Cliff. Yeah,
I have a completely different thought about that. Hillary, it was a very perceptive question, and it's sort of striking that you get it and I get it, but the courts are still pretending that you don't waive rights. There is no question that you are waiving the right to have the law enforced properly, period. I mean, they're not saying you waive your right to be free of discrimination going into arbitration, but if the arbitrator gets it wrong, you have lost your right to have the law enforced. No one can argue with that, not even my good friend Fred. And there are also other aspects of the arbitration agreements that have the effect, what the courts have said, constitute a de facto waiver. For instance, if you can't bring discovery, you've effectively lost your right to be free of discrimination if you can't prove it. If the statute of limitations is shortened down so that if I was in court, I would have a full year, but in arbitration, I've only got 6 months, you've lost that right. So Hillary's right that you lose the right to have the law enforced, and it is a de facto waiver. And the only way to justify it is if it's voluntary. If people can say, let's flip a coin. If you want to flip a coin to settle your case, you can do that, but it has to be voluntary. It can't be a condition of employment.
Let me just say, Hillary and Cliff may be right, but the courts disagree with both of them. And I just think it's important that your listeners understand, I understand the philosophical point and I respect it, but the courts have made very clear that you're just changing an arbitration panel for a courthouse. All of your rights are there, and if there's too many limitations on your rights, like for discovery and statutes of limitations and those sorts of things, the courts will not enforce the arbitration clause.
But you've got to have an attorney, of course, to help you do that, naturally.
You would if you're in court.
All right. Okay, the number 1415-841-4134 if you'd like to speak to my guests, Cliff Pileski and Fred Alvarez. Also, it's Call a Lawyer Night. We have 7 attorneys here at the station, and they are ready, willing, and able to talk with you. That number, 1-800-525-9917. By the way, this is all great public service of these attorneys, both the attorneys on the program here as well as the attorneys for Call a Lawyer, and I hope you take advantage of it. And we've got Tim. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you very much. I have 2 simple questions, but I think they're rather profound. Number one is, why aren't your guests distinguishing between binding and non-binding arbitration?
Okay.
Number one. And number two, equally simple question with profound implications. Many employees are represented by unions who don't really give them a chance to elect one way or another as to whether or not they agree to new terms and conditions for an employee agreement. In other words, when there's negotiation going on for a 1-year, 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, what have you, employee-employer agreement, in most cases that I know of, and I know 2 in particular with a major food and grocery operation, the employees were never given a chance to elect to say, I agree or I don't agree.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me get some...
Now, that seems like a major abuse if someone's right.
All right, let me get some comments for you on both of those very significant questions. How about binding versus non-binding arbitration?
Well, there is a big difference. I don't see many companies in the employment context using non-binding arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason is because arbitration is very expensive.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say it's expensive? I mean, so expensive, why would an employer want to do it? Are you saying it's more expensive than going to court?
I can file a complaint in court for about $380,
yes,
and I don't have to pay a judge.
Yes.
The filing fee in arbitration can range, just to file, mm-hmm, at the American Arbitration Association, can be up to $13,000. Arbitrators charge sometimes $8,000 per day per arbitrator.
Wow.
In certain contexts, in certain states, like California, the employer has to pay that sometimes for certain kinds of claims.
Mm-hmm.
But for other kinds of claims, employees have to pay 50% up front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are places in this country and in California where if you want to bring a claim against your employer, you might actually have to come up with $20,000 or $30,000.
You as an individual
in order to have your claim heard.
Wow.
As opposed to paying $300 in court.
What do you say to this, Al?
I say that's a very rare case, because every case that in fact, Cliff has been at the forefront of creating this law, but every case in which there's a public policy at issue, like one of these unwaivable rights we're talking about, the employer has to pay the filing fee and pay for the arbitrator. So all these expenses, I mean, the deal that the California Supreme Court has made with employers is, if you want to have mandatory arbitration, then you pay for it. It shouldn't be any more...
Then the employee doesn't have to pay for it.
That's right. It shouldn't be any more expensive to have an arbitration than it is to file in court.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the rule, and
mm-hmm,
that's the way it works. I mean, I guess you could think of a case that didn't involve any public policy, and if you wanted to arbitrate that one, maybe you've got to pay half.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm,
every lawyer I know will throw in a discrimination count, a wage and hour count, something that involves public policy, and that means the employer has to pay for the whole thing.
Okay. All right.
The second question about unions is really a completely different issue. It goes to the concept of labor law, collective rights, and obviously there are union elections. Unions don't just show up on the scene. The workers at some point vote
for the union leaders.
A union in the first place.
Yeah.
And then for their union leaders,
mm-hmm,
and they have the right. Just like in a democracy, you vote for your legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, if the union leaders are selling out the membership, then they should be removed. But the labor laws that set up unions have their own processes for union elections.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, obviously,
mm-hmm,
once the election's over, the leaders have the ability to negotiate certain terms.
Mm-hmm.
there's only certain things within the authority of unions to negotiate.
But Tim is correct. Generally, the average union member is not asked to vote on this proposed union contract with the employer.
No, that's not true.
That's not true? So he's wrong? Tim's wrong on that?
In most situations, the leaders negotiate the contract, but it's put to the membership for a vote. There's been a lot of examples where the leaders have negotiated pretty weak contracts and the membership votes it down.
You know, it's really a function, I agree with Cliff, it's really a function of the bylaws and the constitution of the particular union. Because some unions say every agreement has to be ratified. Mm-hmm. Other unions, based on their own bylaws and constitution, don't require it. So I think it's a matter of the particular union and how they do it. But mostly, employees have to ratify a contract. Let me say one thing about non-binding arbitration.
Yes.
I think that was a really good question. Indeed, there are employers who have non-binding arbitration. And the reason they have it is because they want to have a forum to get a dispute resolved quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the feeling is that if you can let somebody have their day in court cheaply in front of an arbitrator instead of having a big jury trial, you know, they have their day in court, mm-hmm. they win or they lose, the employer doesn't make it binding,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of disputes will just stop after that point.
When we talk about, as Tim has suggested, non-binding, does that mean that it's not non-binding both, generally speaking, non-binding both as to the employer as well as the employee?
Yes.
I see. Okay. All right. Let me do this.
Although, one last thing. Yes. Some employers make it binding as against themselves,
yes.
not the employee.
I got you.
It's a function of
yeah.
how they want to communicate.
You mentioned that before. Call a lawyer is 1415. No, call a lawyer is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. If you want to speak to my guests, it's 1-415-841-4134. Let me tell you about something that's happening this Saturday, March 31st. There is a foreclosure prevention fair sponsored by the office of San Mateo County Supervisor Carol Groom, in cooperation with some very fine organizations that are doing their best to try to help people who are facing foreclosures. This will be in San Mateo at the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo. Again, it's March 31st, just this coming Saturday from 9 to noon. HUD-certified housing counselors will be there, attorneys, tax professionals, people from the Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto, Project Sentinel from the AFL-CIO Community Services, San Mateo County Central Labor Council. If you want more information, the number to call is 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443, extension 307. Again, that's this Saturday, March 31st. At 1300 South El Camino Real in San Mateo from 9 to noon. It's free, and it may be very helpful to you if you are facing a foreclosure. All right, Howard, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, thank you. I'll try and be as concise as I can. I am a small business owner and have been for 15 years. In that time, I had one complaint to the labor department, and so I went through the process where it's not really a trial, but you're heard by somebody. Both sides are heard by somebody from the labor commission. They went through the process. They give you a determination later by mail, which was determined that for everything that we had talked about, that the employee was not correct, and I had the paperwork and backup, but that they had decided something else that we had not talked about and imposed a penalty, which is a multiple over 30 days. And in doing that, of course, that was a much larger number, but also when I looked at it carefully, the math was wrong. It was just a simple math was also wrong. I didn't want to continue the process. I just wanted to be done with it. So I went down to the courthouse, and they said the only way to get the number changed or for anybody to review the map was to file an appeal, which I did. And then about a month later, I got a call from a very angry attorney and telling me that I had to have my own attorney and that they were going to, you know, bother me for the rest of my life or make my life miserable. Mm. And I just had no intention of carrying forward. I just wanted someone to look at the math because it was off. So I had to go down, and I just sat in the attorney's office and said, I'm just going to write a check for whatever the number needs to be so that I can stop this process. And did, and then they reviewed it and said, oh, yeah, the math was wrong, but there's nothing we're going to do about it. I mentioned that only to say that since then I've avoided anything, that process, like the plague. And recently I had a part-time a contractor who sent in hours that they didn't work, and I asked them to come in and show me what they were talking about, and I got a letter from an attorney, but not from the labor board, and no labor board complaint or anything. It was just from an attorney demanding the same money and penalties.
Well,
as I
described. So let me get some comments for you, Howard. Obviously, you've had a history of this, which is difficult, I think, for my guests to perhaps give any kind of potential answer to. But I only
mentioned the history. It was literally one incident in 15 years, and it didn't.
You didn't like
it. Avoid the process.
Yeah,
no, I just want to avoid the process.
Well, let me get some comments for you. Turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling. Fred, please.
So this is one of the frustrations of the employer side of the equation. Obviously, we don't know whether it was right or wrong, or the labor commissioner was or wasn't, or whether the money was owed or not owed. But the expense of defending against a claim can sometimes be more than what's involved in the claim.
And
it's one of the reasons employers try to get into an arbitration process that, you know, won't be as elaborate and hopefully can get resolved much more quickly. But the expense of defending against claims is what drives small business owners like him a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see why.
Any comments, Cliff?
Yeah, well, I agree. I am a small business owner, so I can relate to that. And I understand why even well-intentioned people can make a mistake, whether it be in calculations or in who's right and who's wrong, mm-hmm. which is why the right to appeal is so vital.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Howard, if you don't like being stuck with arbitrary decisions, you should watch out for arbitration.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My guests are both very experienced employment law attorneys, Fred Alvarez of the firm. Is Wilson Sonsini beyond California or just primary California?
No, we're beyond California.
Are you beyond California?
Yes.
All right. Wilson Sonsini, Goodrich & Rosati, Fred Alvarez is a partner in the Palo Alto office. Cliff Pilewski's firm, are you beyond California or just in California?
We're in California. We try to stay close to the Bay Area.
Okay. Of the firm of McGuinn, Hillsman & Pilewski in San Francisco. And Ian, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah. I think I have a little sense about it, but I always feel like I'm not quite sure what's all involved. When you hear things like it, I think it was in Indiana, where the legislature voted to change it to a right-to-work state. What are the implications of that change for workers?
A right-to-work state. Okay, let me get Fred to respond. Turn your radio back up, Ian. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, this is a little complicated, but I'll get through.
All right.
So the National Labor Relations Act, the federal law that governs labor relations, allows a union to agree with an employer a mandatory membership clause. In other words, you have to pay dues and be a member of that union to work there. And if you don't pay your dues and you're not a member, then you get fired. The National Labor Relations Act permits that to happen. And in almost every collective bargaining agreement I've ever seen, it has a mandatory union shop clause. But there is a little proviso in the National Labor Relations Act that says you can do that unless you're in a state that says you can't. So it's what Congress sort of said, we'll allow this except for in states that don't really like that. And so a number of states around the country have passed a right-to-work law. And so the right to work law would mean, and again, I'm speaking generally here, would mean that in the state, in that particular state, a union contract could not require a person to become a member of the union to work there, mm-hmm. even though there was a union there.
I see.
So they wouldn't have to pay dues, and they wouldn't have to go to the meetings, and they wouldn't have to honor the picket lines. But in states that don't have right to work, like California, for example, if the union negotiates a closed shop agreement, then everybody who works there has to pay dues as a condition of working there.
Closed shop means you have to, if you work there, you have to be a member of the union.
You have to pay dues.
And you have to pay dues.
There's a distinction between paying dues and being a member.
Really?
In quotes.
How is that? What's the distinction?
Members are... paying dues members are people who pay the amount of money that union members do, but they don't actually become members. Because there's another level of membership in a union, and that's you agree to follow the bylaws and the constitution of the union, which typically means you can't cross the picket line.
Oh, really?
Because then you would get in trouble with the union, and you'd have a trial against you. And so there's a distinction between a financial member and a full member. And the most that they can require is that you be a financial member. But people don't typically understand that distinction.
Well, it's pretty confusing.
It is a little confusing.
I think it's pretty confusing. Cliff, do you have some...
It's an interesting issue, but calling it the right to work law is right to work law is sort of like calling the peacekeeper missile.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an anti-union mm-hmm. law, and mm-hmm. you need to step back. Clearly, there are unions that don't do their job well. There are unions that do their job very well. If corporations had their way, there would be no unions. Wages would go down to next to nothing. There mm-hmm. would be no wage and hour laws.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see what's going on in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Ohio, that's what, I hate to say it, but the Republican agenda is to undermine unions and to take money away from unions because they feel unions support Democratic candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets into a much bigger mm-hmm. Issue. You know, I thought it would be helpful, Chuck, if we could just step back and just say arbitration is one way to, one alternative, but mediation.
Let me stop you for just a moment. We still have a few minutes. I want to give you our phone number, and then we're coming back to you, Cliff, in just a moment. 841-4134. If you'd like to speak to my guests, your question, comment, whatever it is, 415-841-4134. It's also Call a Lawyer Night. I can see our lawyers are talking to each other again. That's not what I want to have happen here. It's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer Night. And tomorrow, if you are facing a horrendous amount of debt and you're trying to find out whether or not you should go into bankruptcy, Leon Bayer, a certified specialist, will be available tomorrow by phone, 8 to 11 a.m., no obligation on your part whatsoever. That's tomorrow, Thursday, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. Coming back to you, Cliff. Go ahead.
Yeah, I certainly think that it's accurate that in many ways courts are cumbersome, expensive, and time-consuming, and not the best way to resolve disputes, especially when there's an ongoing relationship. I think one thing that Fred and I really agree on is that mediation, which is another alternative to litigation, is really a great process. Mm-hmm. It truly is less expensive. It truly is voluntary. And almost by definition, there's only a result if it's mutually agreeable. And it works really well in the employment context. It works pretty well in the family law context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if people are looking for an alternative to expensive litigation, to time-consuming litigation, and they don't want to sign up for binding mandatory arbitration, I think we all recommend mediation as a very civilized way to resolve
disputes. What comments do you have on that, Fred?
Leave it to Cliff to find what we totally agree on, and
yeah,
we do totally agree on that.
You know, when I get a complaint in my office, the San Mateo County DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit, which I'm a member of, which is a dispute between perhaps a consumer and a business, or sometimes it's a dispute between two neighbors or whatever it may be. I will refer this to one of the very significant mediation programs, Peninsula Conflict Resolution Center in San Mateo County, which is a nonprofit organization, and they've had a great reputation. So mediation, I agree with you, is a wonderful way to do it, and it's very reasonable, comparatively speaking.
It is less expensive, and it really works. And it's important that people understand the distinction. In mediation, you never lose control of your case.
Yeah, yeah.
No one imposes anything on you.
Because no one tells you what to do.
And it's the exact opposite of arbitration, yeah. Even though they're lumped together oftentimes.
I think we have, do we have one more caller on the, who wants to ask a question or whatever? What I want to do is take the call if we can. And let me see who this is. Let me bear with us just a moment, if you would. We're getting it. Barton's putting it up there. Orlando, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. My name is Orlando.
Go ahead with your question.
And I'm calling. It has more to do with the workplace environment, you know, health-wise. We've had several employees in the office get sick, and, you know, some of them died from different illnesses. And we've had Cal OSHA come out and do assessments on the building. And they don't seem to be able to find anything, but it's, you know, it just seems like it's a sick building.
Wow.
What are we supposed to do about that?
Wow, what a question. Let me try to get some comments from you. This is a very significant question. I'm sorry it comes up at the end of the program. Turn your radio back up, if you would, Orlando. What comments do you have for him, Cliff?
What
should he do? If OSHA doesn't find anything, what do you do?
Well, I'm assuming that there's no union there. I've heard a lot about these sick building syndromes. I don't have a lot of experience with it, but you can bring in private consultants, but they're expensive.
It is.
To do testing.
Yes.
Cal OSHA is actually pretty good at doing those kinds of inspections and toxicology analyses, so I'm surprised.
What comments do you have, Fred?
I tend to agree. From an employer's perspective, if Cal OSHA comes in and doesn't find anything, you know you've been through the ringer, because Cal OSHA is highly respected and has a lot of experience and history, so maybe.
I didn't ask you what county you were in, Orlando. One other suggestion I have, if you think that Cal OSHA perhaps is not doing its job, one of the suggestions I would have is that you contact the county environmental health department and ask them to come out and see if you can get some other opinion from them. I don't know what else you do otherwise, other than bringing in a private consultant
or a lawyer. I mean,
if
there are a lot of people coming down with the same illness, you might actually talk to someone that does personal injury work, because they may be missing something.
But then it's workers' compensation too, so it's a little complicated.
But you still might have a remedy.
We've come to the end of the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on the program. Cliff Pileski, in another 20 years, will do another program. I hope it's sooner than that. Cliff Pileski is a partner in the law firm of McGuinn, Hilsman, and Pileski in San Francisco. And Fred, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Fred Alvarez is a partner of Wilson, Sonsini, Goodrich, and Rosati in the Palo Alto office. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, if you're interested, we're going to have a discussion of various crimes. My guest will be Stan Friedman, a certified specialist in criminal law. He's a former chair of the Criminal Law Advisory Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And by the way, if you still would like our Call a Lawyer night, which is just this night, March 28th, is 1-800-525-9917. We'll do that again toward the end of April. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney.